saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, hey there, friends. Welcome to the season 3 finale of Drew Blood's Dark Tales. Can you believe it? It seems like just yesterday, Steve Vernon let me narrate The Bridge on my own little YouTube channel. It's been quite a while, but at Casa de Blood, we never forget our friends. Well, that's true, Chester. We sometimes forget our old YouTube channels, but we never forget our friends. Was he trying to tell me something there? Oh well, come on in, friend. Oh, that reminds me. Happy World Tuberculosis Day, everyone. I'm not sure why people want to celebrate that. But by all means, smoke 'em if you got 'em and drink those glasses to the bottom. Because old Drew Blood has iron lungs. But first.
Oh, hey, I didn't see you there. You know, Drew Blood's Dark Tales is only one of the many shows on this network you could be listening to. We hope you'll subscribe to our entire lineup, including Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Fear from the Heartland, and Horror Hill. All available on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. Also, visit simplyscarypodcast.com to become a patron. For as little as $5 a month, you get our entire catalog, ad-free, and available to download or stream. A bargain. And now, back to the show.
And continuing our Stars of Season 1 initiative, we welcome back Steve Vernon, veteran of weird fiction. He last joined us in Episode 9 of Season 2, All Wood Dreams of the Sun. Tonight, we join Sonny, a man who means to hitch himself a nice easy ride, and ends up getting hitched on himself. So, without further delay, from author Steve Vernon, I give you, Jumpin' Cholo Will Never Die. I'm telling this story from a mouth that cannot speak. I don't rightly know why I'm even bothering to try to tell it. The only audience that pretends to be listening is the highway gravel under this hyperthalidomized butt that I have inherited, a couple of lazy sawflies helicoptering by, and the ant-chewed skull of a rogue-killed armadillo. Even the buzzards are afraid to come near me. Anyways, I am telling it. Like all of the stories I've ever heard, this one is and isn't true in almost all the right places, depending on how you hold your mouth. If I only had a mouth to hold. Well, listen up, old skull, and I'll tell you how it all went down. It all started with my mouth and the words that fell out of it. My grandpa Jake told me I could talk my way into and out of anything I wanted, and a whole lot more of what I didn't want, if I wasn't particularly careful.
"Sonny Jones,"
he'd say,
"your lips ain't no prayer book, but when it comes to silver tongues, God gave you the whole damn mother load. It's just too damn bad the good Lord didn't give you any stick-to-itiveness."
Well, rubber and glue, Grandpa. Rubber and glue. Everything you say bounces off of me and sticks back on you. Grandpa always called me Sonny because I'd get up every morning and could burn you if you weren't too careful. And I guess the name just stuck, because even now folks call me Sonny. Grandpa and I don't see much of each other these days on account of he won't see me, on account of the time I talked him into buying a 6,000 shares in the Mexican gold mine with a name you couldn't pronounce the same way twice. Grandpa didn't take it too badly, seeing it was only a penny issue, but he took it kind of personal when I refused to give him his money back. And that's just the kind of fellow I am. See, I'm the kind of guy that fishes all the beef out of the beef stew before anyone else has a chance to. If you've got it, I want it, is the motto I try to live by. I figure it serves you right if you let yourself get sucked in by me. Some folks would call me entrepreneurial. Others would call me a low-down, egg-sucking, sponge-handed grifter. You can call me Sonny. Excuse me, folks, but here comes an Eldorado, and I got to take me a stab at hooking a ride. Only I guess these goddamn thumbs that I've acquired are just too damn small to be seen, because that big old roadboat just rolled right on by, clouds of dust rolling out behind it, damn near rolling me over in the suck of its god-almighty windstream. That's just my luck, I guess.
Sonny,
my grandpa Jake would always say to me,
you're so damn unlucky that if you died and were reincarnated, you'd probably come back as yourself.
Well, he was right as Texas rain about that. Every one of my end-of-the-rainbow schemes always ended up blown up in my face like those exploding cigars you used to be able to order out of the back of comic books. This particular stroke of bad luck that I'm laboring under started back on a Greyhound bus out of New Mexico, headed for Garden City, Texas, or bust. Now, I don't much like buses. They take too damn long to get anywhere. I talked to a bus driver once about this, and he told me that buses always go straight where they're going, and didn't I know that the shortest distance between two points was always a straight line? And then I asked him if he had ever had to walk a 19-year-old weak-bladdered, gimpy-legged bloodhound straight through a forest of unpeed-upon tree stumps before. I guess you see my point. Straight can be as crooked as you allow it. It's a God-given truth that the shortest distance between two points is always a shortcut. And like as not, it's apt to be a crooked one. Which brings me right back to where I'm at. A crooked shortcut on my way to getting rich quick. Here on this bus headed for Garden City, Texas, or bust. Garden City, Texas. That has to be some kind of joke. As far as I could see, the only thing that Texas could grow was miles and miles of get-in-your-grin kind of dust. And the only kind of garden I would call that would be the garden of getting even. Like my grandpa used to say, the only two things certain in life is death and Texas. See, Texas's largest crop is the jumping cholo. That is a sneaky little cactus, twice as persistent as kudzu, and twice as nasty as a rattlesnake with hemorrhoids of the belly. The cholo looks just like any other cactus until you walk past it. It's got a mechanism so damn sensitive that the shadow of a cat will set it right off. The vibration of a footstep will cause the jumping cholo to snap off in your direction, like a big old thistle. It'll hook into your boot or your butt, ride with you for half a mile or so, and then drop off. Where it drops, it roots, and another cholo begins to grow. Some folks claim that if you burn the skin off the cholo, it's good for cattle feed, if your cattle ain't fussy. But if you ask me, they aren't good for anything but making more cholo, and hitchhiking where they ain't wanted. Which brings me back to buses. Like I said, I don't much care for buses, and like you figured, I definitely don't care for buses going to Texas, except when I'm not on them. The only reason I'm on this one is on account of Brenda Storm and her daughter, little 7-year-old Jenny. Let me tell you about Brenda. She's your original Texas school marm, a little worn around the edges, but pretty enough to look at if you squint. Now, I wouldn't call her ugly, but she's got a face that'd make a freight train think about taking a long walk down a dirt road. Anyway, I think Brenda's stuck on me, and I guess I can't blame her. But for somebody who's supposed to be hopelessly in love, she's being awfully cagey about it. You see, Brenda's been burnt once, and she stayed away from the campfire ever since. She was married once. It seemed that the fella she got hooked up with, Harry was his name, was one of those kinds of guys who would never stick around long enough to leave town. He was always close enough to wave his copy of their wedding certificate under her nose just in case she forgot who she was supposed to belong to. Yet, whenever she needed something done, he was off with his buddies in a bar or shacked up with some hot tamale he had met down the road. Even after she up and left him, he kept turning up like the second fiddle in a country waltz. He wouldn't give her a moment to draw a good-sized breath. I suppose you could give old Harry an A for perseverance, but then again, you could say the same thing about that chunk of dried manure that insists on hanging up in that shady notch where a cowboy's boot heel meets his sole. Or, for that matter, a chunk of jumping cholo. There came a day when Brenda finally had enough. She set out to leave Texas. I guess she figured if she put enough miles between her and Harry, he'd leave her be once and for all. On account he had lost his driver's license once and twice. He lost it once in a poker game and twice to a judge. I guess Brenda figured wrong. The next thing, old Harry is standing in front of her station wagon, waving their wedding certificate and telling her that he wasn't about to let her go. So Brenda hit the gas. She swears to this day that one of her high heels got wedged beneath the accelerator. Maybe they did and maybe they didn't. Whatever the case, that big Detroit iron went from 0 to 40 in the time it took to slam into old Harry's wherewithals. I hear it was quite a sight. I'm talking pure technicolor multiple trauma. You ever see what one of those big blue-assed houseflies looked like right after you nail it with your latest copy of Popular Mechanics? The paramedics had to use a garden hose to get what Harry called his guts out of Brenda's bumper. Brenda herself used the wedding certificate to wipe the grill dry. Waste not, want not. That was Brenda's motto. Only I think she had another definition of waste in mind. So Brenda was finally free, but she wasn't exactly what you'd call flush. If High on the Hog is rich, Brenda was hanging out somewhere south of the Big Pig's Hind Trotters. It seems the only kind of life insurance old Harry had kept had been a second pair of shoes and a change of boxer shorts. About the only worthwhile thing he left Brenda was her 7-year-old daughter, Jenny. Since then, Brenda and Jenny stuck together tighter than bubblegum on silk. I didn't come into the picture until about 1.5 years later. When I met Brenda, she and Jenny lived in a trailer park up in New Mexico where they'd moved to from Texas. Which is sort of like moving from a pimple on Satan's left butt cheek to a festering boil on his right butt cheek. Now right away, I was touched by Brenda's plight. You've got to believe me that the thought of her trying to raise a daughter on the little bit of come-by-chance cash she managed to scrape up and the dole she drew from the government really melted my butter, so I moved in on Brenda. I was just trying to help, you understand. Still, she was harder to nail down than a loose shingle in a Kansas windstorm. All the same, I started dropping in on her unexpected and all the time offering to help out with a few round-the-house kind of handyman jobs. You know, the sort of things women can't rightly do without a man. Complicated things like mowing the lawn or painting the fence. Yet, no matter what I did, she kept giving me the cold shoulder. Yes, sir. Getting to know Brenda was about as hard as hunting for a whisper in the middle of a thunderstorm. I'm not saying the lady was hard to please, but if she ever gets to heaven, I bet she asked for a look at the upstairs first. It took me 2 weeks, but I finally figured what was my best foot in the door of opportunity. It was little Jenny. Like the good book says, a little child shall lead them. The way I figured it was, deep down in her heart of hearts, dear sweet Brenda must have known her little tyke needed some kind of father figure to give her true wisdom. I figured I qualified for sure. All I had to do was to pay a little attention to little Jenny, and Brenda would be bound to up and say howdy to good old Sonny Jones. Now, from what you know about good old Sonny Jones, you're probably asking yourself why the hell am I bothering so hard at buttering up Brenda's fritters? Well, old skull, I'll tell you. What Brenda did not know was that her dotty Texan grandmother, 2.5 shuffles away from the bone orchard, had rewritten her will, Old Granny was hardcore Baptist indignant over the notion that her other grandchild was living in sin with a one-eyed Tennessee truck stop waitress. Me, I think it was mostly the part about Tennessee that burnt Granny's grits. But whatever the reason, Brenda's respectable widowhood made her old Granny sole heir. Brenda was due to haul in a stash of government bonds worth somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 or 8 kinds of zeros. That was big pickings for a small-time chicken picker like me. I found out about this whole deal because right about the time Brenda's dear sweet granny rewrote her will, I just happened to be plowing the lower 40 of that lawyer's legal secretary. Now, you know what they say about pillow talk making good acquaintances. That legal secretary couldn't wait to ask me if I'd ever heard anything so crazy as the idea of this crazy loaded old lady leaving all of her worldlies to her no-account trailer trash daughter. Once I'd gotten the lowdown on Brenda's whereabouts, I told that lady legal secretary I'd call her later. Then I sort of lost her phone number and skipped town, heading for Brenda's neck of the woods. I wanted to get there before some egg-sucking weasel bastard got there before me. I imagine right about now that legal secretary is sitting and waiting by the payphone in the nearest 2-bit honky-tonk saloon, weeping in her whiskey over me. Ordinarily, I would say it served her right, but the fact is, if she caught a look at the way I'd look right now, I don't figure she'd wait much longer. She'd start looking for some other cowboy's whiskey to sip, only she wouldn't be doing no sipping. No sir, old skull. One look at the way I look right now, and she'd be needing a bottle or two of nasty Jack Daniels to wash the sight of me out from her eyes. Oh, wait a minute. Here comes the pickup. It's only a Dodge, but beggars can't be choosers. I am determined this time. I jump up and down as best I can, waving what's left of my arms and wiggling my thumbs. And for a minute, that fella in the Dodge slows down to pick me up. I start singing hallelujah inside my head. Then that pickup driver sticks his head out the side window, takes one good look at me, and his eyes start bugging out, and his mouth makes open and close kinds of motions like he was trying to bag first place in a fly-catching contest. And then that old slicking cow-licked bastard pulled away fast. Which brings me roundabout back to that Greyhound bus bound for Garden City, Texas, or bust. It was Brenda's idea to take the bus, no matter how much I tried to convince her to just rent a car. She figured we couldn't spare the cash, and even though we were headed for the reading of Granny's will, I didn't want to tip my hand just yet about the inheritance, so I had to play along. I insisted on paying for the tickets, and when she said she wouldn't hear of it, we settled for half and half. Only Brenda forgot her purse at home, so I ended up paying for the tickets, lock, stock, and ham hock, all by my own self. That didn't matter. I just kept counting those 7 or 8 kinds of zeros in my mind, figuring that I was going to get what was coming to me, sooner or later. "It's all right," Brenda said. "I like buses. You get so close to so many people. It's just such an interesting way to travel." Now, I never said that Brenda was stupid, but you can probably see for yourself that she was dumb enough to try and kill a fish by drowning it in the river. "I like buses, too," chimed in Jenny, as if I had asked a little snot-nosed brat. Oops, did I let that slip out? You see, the only time me and kids get along any better than house cats and coyotes is when there are 7 or 8 kinds of zeros tacked to their diaper pins. And even that is a short-term relationship at best. Anyways, things played out just the way I planned them. Brenda and little Jenny were traveling to Texas for old grandmother's funeral. I was riding beside her with a big cubic zirconium ring in my pocket, waiting for a moment of emotional weakness on her part to drop down on one knee, pull out the wedding ring, and take aim. I should mention right about now that I had Brenda sitting behind me, so I could manfully share the responsibility of keeping little Jenny amused. I figured the more grateful Brenda was to me, the more likely she'd say yes to my proposition. Once I got her to say I do, it'd be apple pie and ice cream easy to grab the power of attorney and hop a fast jet to Mexico with cash in hand, leaving Brenda and Jenny back in the trailer park where I'd found them. No harm, no foul. The trouble really started when I first laid eyes on that goddamn thalidomide reject from a carny freak show sitting in the seat ahead of us. I probably would have noticed him before I did, except I was too busy telling little Jenny the story of Br'er Rabbit and the Tar Baby. You know that one, where Br'er Fox and Br'er Bear built this sticky pie poppet to catch that rabbit. Only once he's stuck, he talks them into throwing him into the cholo patch. I always liked that part of the story, you understand, on account of me and Br'er Rabbit being sort of what you'd call kindred spirits. The way my grandpa Jake always told the story, Br'er Fox and Br'er Bear struck them a match to that Tar Baby once they'd caught Br'er Rabbit, and had themselves a mess of a southern-style blackened Hassenpfeffer. I didn't find out until high school that the story ended any differently than that. Anyways, I was right in the middle of Br'er Rabbit's best, "Please don't you dare throw me into that there cholo patch," when I noticed that this freak show reject had moved into the seat directly in front of me and little Jenny. "Boy, are you ugly," I said just as soon as I caught a look at him. Now, normally I'm a little more tactful than that, being the cultured man that I am. I mean, I might have thought it, and maybe even whispered it to little Jenny and Brenda, but I sure as hell wouldn't have said it right out loud like I did, not so anybody else could have heard it. But he sure was ugly. He kind of reminded me of a runt pig, all pinkish and blotchy, and ugly, in a fatty, skinnish kind of way. The thing that you noticed most about him was his arms, or rather his lack of arms. Nothing but little stumpy pink seal flippers, with just the beginnings of fingers poking out from his palms. Just stubs, you understand. Sort of like he'd run arm first into a brick wall 5,000 or 6,000 times. And you could tell from the angle of his fingers that some of his hand muscles got started somewhere back behind his shoulder meat. His feet, too. They were tiny things tacked on to the ends of legs that were no longer than little Jenny's. Only his torso was full-sized, and that had made up for all his shortcomings. It was about the heft of a full-sized sack of feed, all lumpy and extra long in the belly, like he had to have a lot of room for swallowing. His head was worse. He didn't have a neck to speak of, and his mouth was buried under wobbly folds of sickly pink flesh. All in all, what with the way his finger stumps and his stumpified head poked out, he looked like a man trying to crawl out from underneath a giant pink slug. Well, sir, I took one look at him, and I had to go and say what I did. "Boy, are you ugly." And I figured we'd have ourselves some kind of ugly scene going on when he lost his temper and started squealing like a runt pig. Only he didn't say a word. He just sat there, saying nothing. Little Jenny giggled and I wanted to give her a slap to improve her manners, but Brenda was watching, so I figured I'd save it for later. So instead I played along, nodding at Ugly and grinning at little Jenny like it was some sort of a joke. And come to think of it, it was kind of funny.
"Don't stare," whispered Brenda from behind us. "He's just the same as us inside. We're all God's children."
Like I said, Brenda was dumber than ignorant dirt. He didn't look like any child I'd ever seen. And I stared anyways, no matter what she said. In fact, I made it a point to get out of my seat to have a good long look. No particular reason, just honest-to-cat-killing curiosity. "Well, you know what they say. Nobody buys beer, they just rent it," I said in a louder than usual voice, trying to cover up my curiosity. "It's time to drain the old lizard." Brenda glared at me, and I guess she knew what I was up to. But hell, she'd get over it. I just had to have a better look at this here freak. So I got up. I made like I was going to take a walk to the back of the bus to the washroom. Only while I was getting up, I leaned over and caught a good long look at what was sitting ahead of me and little Jenny. I saw a pair of eyes the color of those yellow strips of flypaper that hang from the beams of the butcher shop. Only they were kind of panicky, like he was having a hard time breathing. And maybe he was, because his nose was sort of humped in around where his mouth had been buried. It made me wonder how he ever managed to eat. There was something about this little freak that reminded me of my Uncle Thad, the one who loved to come to birthday parties and do the magic trick where he pulled a silver dollar out of your ear. Only he would always make it disappear, too, even though there were a half a dozen empty-pocketed kids staring him directly in his yellowed-out, whiskied-over, bottle-beady eyes. I'm tired from all this remembering. I think I'm just going to stop thinking for a while. A car drove by. Big old Lincoln. Somebody in the back threw a beer bottle at me. The bottle was empty, and it wasn't even my brand. I just kept on staring at that armadillo skull that was keeping me company. An aunt dropped by to visit the skull, just in case there was a nugget of brain meat left. I smiled inside myself and say, "Hi, Aunt." The aunt veered away, like I'm so bad he can sense me smiling at him. He crawled off the skull and was just about to head for home when the sand spilled away from beneath his feet, and he seemed to sink like one of those explorers in those Tarzan movies who step in quicksand. I know that it's an ant line that's been laying there under the dirt all this time, just waiting for an ant to come along. Now it's got him, reaching out with a pair of long, strong ant-chomping jaws that are part arm and part teeth, and he's sucking him right down into the bottom of its pit, where he'll suck him dry and chew what's left. Lucky ant. Which brings me right back to where I shouldn't have been when I did what I did, what got me into all this. By this time, I'd got back from pretending to go to the pee hole, and little Jenny had fallen asleep on my right arm, holding on to my right hand. She'd been like this for nearly an hour, and my arm was beginning to get that pins and needles feeling that always feels as if there are 6,000 fire ants crawling underneath your skin, nibbling away at your nerve endings with their burning little nips. And my armpits were getting sticky from the heat. On top of that, she'd begun to drool. Stinking kid drool, puddling up stickily about the hairs on my right forearm. So I ask you, what man in his right mind can put up with this kind of abuse? I figure I had to do something about it. And that's when I thought of something funny. Something so goddamn funny, I still ain't laughing over it. I reached over with my left hand and gently, oh so gently, reached over to little Jenny's arm and slid it loose from my right hand. Then gently, oh so gently, I hoisted her hand up until it was almost touching the little thalidomide freak's left handlet. If his hands hadn't been growing out of his shoulders, I never would have managed the trick, but they were, and there I was. Wait till she wakes up holding hands with this, I thought. That'd teach her to put my arm to sleep. The funny thing was, as I got closer to touching their two hands together, Jenny's and this little freakazoid's, it seemed to get easier, like somebody was helping me. I felt this strange kind of magnetic pull, like when you put your hands in a fast-flowing creek and the current pushes at your flesh until you can feel your skin flapping against your bones and such. And then the hands touched, and the little thalidomide freakazoid began to move. Not move like get up and walk. Not move like cough or sneeze or wiggle. He just sort of slimed up along the seat, somehow stretching himself out and up in a long little Jenny's hand. Her eyes flew open. I could hear panic fluttering in her chest like one of those big old Luna moths that you might sometimes see on a hot summer night, flapping crazily against the window pane. And all this time, he kept on moving. Have you ever seen an amoeba feed? That's how it was with the two of them, little Jenny and that goddamn freak. Him oozing his body up over hers, from his shoulders on down, somehow sucking her into him, like he was some kind of a human jellyfish. At the same time that it was sucking onto little Jenny, its head and arms kept pushing out, like there was something inside that big fat pink slug trying to climb up and out and over her. It was like drowning in a dream. It happened real slow and real fast, both at the same time. First I was there, staring at this pink thing sucking little Jenny in. Then Jenny found breath enough for one short, sharp scream that stopped all of a sudden like somebody had slammed a door. Then Jenny was gone. The next thing I saw was this little man that crawled out of the sucking pink thing while it was pulling little Jenny in. He looked like a scared-to-death life insurance salesman or something. He had that look about him, you understand. Only he was sitting there without any pants on. like he'd just come out of a burning building and hadn't had time to dress. Then everything was back the way it was. Only instead of his original face, it's little Jenny's hands and head that are just barely poking out of that pink-sucking thing's body, right around where its shoulder meat ought to be. At the last instant, Brenda shouted, "My God, Harry, pull her out!" If I had been thinking, I wouldn't have done any such thing. But right then, all I could think of were those 7 or 8 kinds of zeros vanishing in hospital bills and court costs, and the jaws of life and God knows what else. And Brenda being so angry with me that she wouldn't marry me if I were the last man on earth, except for that pink sucky thing. And then I reached out and grabbed little Jenny's hand, figuring I'd pull her out. It was the last stupid thing I did on earth. Do you remember a game we used to play when we were kids called Sticky Tag? Whoever was it would do his best to nab somebody. And then, like those two convicts in that old movie, they'd be handcuffed together wherever they touched, and then the two of them were it. And then they had to try and catch the next person, all the time hanging on to each other's hand. Well, that's how it was. I grabbed little Jenny and tried to pull, but it was too late. She was gone, and I couldn't pull loose of her hand even when I tried to. And that sticky pink slug thing kept reaching its body out around me, reaching and reaching and pulling me in. "Help!" I yelled. Only nobody was helping on account of that scared-to-death life insurance salesman kept yelling, "Don't touch him! Don't nobody touch him!" So, nobody touched me. Well, to hell with all them, I thought. There's no way this little Indian gum rubber man was going to suck me in. I kicked, and my foot started sinking. "Don't struggle," somebody shouted, but by then it was too late. I was pretzeled up like your grandmother's folding chairs that had been stored underneath 3 steamer trunks up in her back attic, in back of 1,000 photo albums and 6 of cobwebs. Next thing I know, my face is going under. I can smell the pink freak's body. It reeks of sweaty gym socks and horse piss and that flat pink bubble gum that you used to get with baseball cards. And then I'm inside him, and I try not to breathe, but it's no use. Whatever he's made out of, I can feel sucking into every pore of my body. The next thing I know, I'm staring out at little Jenny. She's sitting next to me on the seat, right beside that scared, pantless life insurance salesman. They're both staring at me. I try to say something. My mouth feels like it's stuck full of 1,000 wads of chewing gum, and I can't scream. Then the bus screeches to a halt on the side of the road. I hear the bus driver clomping down here, only I'm too busy trying to wobble to my feet to get a good look at Brenda's face. She's standing there hanging on to Jenny, so she must have reached around me and picked her up while I was trying to stand. I try and say help, only the sticky chewing gum feeling in my mouth won't let me speak. I try and make my eyes say help, but they've gone yellow, and all I can say with them is being poured through a sheet of sticky piss-stained cellophane. "What's going on here?" the bus driver asks. "Is this freak causing any trouble?" I tried to turn and look at him, but moving this great ungainly shape is a little like trying to walk around inside a bowl of puke pink jello. So instead of looking at the bus driver, I'm looking at Brenda when she says, "This flipper-handed son of a bitch tried to molest my little daughter, and I think he raped the hell out of this poor man as well." And she's pointing at the scared-to-death life insurance salesman, who must have caught on to what she was up to, because he's nodding his head up and down like one of those stuffed puppies that you see in the back of old Oldsmobiles. The hell of it was, all this time while she's pointing at me, she's staring at me with a look that I think she might have been wearing when she ran old Harry down, the kind of look you might wear while you're stomping on a big old nasty bug. By this time, I've wobbled around to face the bus driver. He's a wide-bodied old boy who probably played a front tackle for his high school football team, and he's just dying to relive old times. "Good, I think. Grab me and I'll suck you in like a chigger through a straw in a windstorm." "Don't touch him," Brenda yells. "Do you want to catch AIDS or something?" Now she's definitely wearing that look, and from the way I see her hanging on to little Jenny, I don't think Brenda's going to miss me at all. I wonder if things would be different if there was some way I could offer her the ring. When Brenda said age, she said the magic word because I felt the bus shift from the weight of everybody, bus driver included, taking two quick steps back. But Mama Jones didn't raise any fools. I just sat back down as quickly as I could manage. Just let them try and move me. Tar baby sit. Don't say nothing. Only next thing I know, I'm staring down the barrel of a pistol that makes Dirty Harry's Magnum look like a piss ant. I'm talking big iron. The kind of gun that makes you feel like you're staring down a double-sized sewer pipe. The sewer pipe cannon was held by the bus driver, who jerks a thumb in the direction of the door. I don't even know if that horse-sized hog leg can hurt this pink blob I'm stuck in, but I've got a plan, and I figure I'll take my chances with it. So before he even gets a chance to say the word out, I'm heading for the door. Like I said, I've got a plan. Just as I reach the door, he leans over to work the crank to open the door. I bend over and grab at his hand with my fingertips, hoping to suck him in instead of me. Only when I do, he doesn't switch. I guess it doesn't work that way. He has to touch me, not the other way around. Then I hear something real close and real loud. The gun in his other hand goes off. The bullet slams into the top of my head that's bent over so my hand could touch his. The next thing I know, I'm flat on my thalidomized butt on the side of a Texas highway in my brand new big pink jelly booger body bag. And the only barrel I'm staring down is that bus's exhaust pipe chuggering off into the distance. Which brings me around to where I started, sitting here on the side of the road. Nobody is stopping, and this is starting to feel like one of those crazy Stephen King monster movies where everybody dies horribly. I'm going to get to live horribly, here inside this sticky pink body bag. There's something leaking out the top of my skull, and I guess it's from where that bus driver shot me. I don't know. Maybe if he had hit me in the stomach, or somewhere covered by this pink sticky stuff, I'd have been all right. But right now, I think I might be dying. So I'm going to get up now and allow myself a single sentimental moment as I say goodbye to this here armadillo skull. I'm going to start walking, and maybe I'll head for the desert, and maybe I'll head down the road, and maybe I'll drop halfway to nowhere in hell, or maybe I'll get there. Maybe I'll get to a city or a truck stop, and maybe some good old boy will pick a fight, and God knows what'll happen next. Maybe I'll get a chance to get out of this pink slug death trap. Maybe when I get out, my brains won't be leaking all over my feet. This here is a whole bag full of maybes, and me without a pot to piss in. One thing's for certain. Texas is one hell of a long life sentence. Period. And that was Jumpin' Cholo Will Never Die by author Steve Vernon. A good reminder that when you're hitching a ride on the low road, you'll always end up going in the wrong direction. Also, don't touch strangers on the bus. It's unseemly. A little about the author. Steve Vernon has been telling and writing horror and ghost stories for the last 40 years. If you like this story, you really ought to check out his many other tales available in ebook, paperback, and audiobook format. You can find Steve Vernon's blog at stevevernonstoryteller.wordpress.com and follow him on Facebook or on Twitter at Stephen Vernon. For his excellent novels and short story collections, look him up on Amazon and audible.com. Check the show notes for a link to his book, More Maritime Murder, Deadly Crimes of the Buried Past. You won't be disappointed. Thanks a lot, Steve.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillinTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. That's just my nice way of saying get on out of here. Try it sometime. It works. I'd like to say hi to a few more listeners of the show. Don Dawson, Laney Carter, and Fameless Customs. Thanks for the nice comments and thanks for listening to the show, y'all. Keep them coming. So, Don Dawson, Laney Carter, and Fameless Customs, may the wind be at your back and may the road rise up to meet you. Brush those burrs off your pant legs. No one rides for free. And until season 4, friends, go fuck yourselves. Good night, y'all.